Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
This is Episode 60, 2020 Candidate Forum, Tessa Douglas, School Board 1.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Color Country Politics. We are continuing our post-primary and pre-general series. And we've got another school board candidate with us today. We are super excited to have Tessa Douglas. Hi, Tessa.
Hi, Jenny.
So I'm Jenny Hendricks. I am here with my co-host.
I am Jesse Harris.
And we are just going to dive right in and give Tessa some time to talk to you about what she is doing, thinking of running for school board. So, Tessa, let's just jump right in. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, thanks. And also, first of all, thanks for having me on your podcast. I appreciate it a lot. So my name is Tessa Douglas, and I am running for school board in District 1, which is kind of the Enoch, unincorporated Iron County area of Cedar City. I grew up in Panaca, Nevada, which is a very, very small town just west of here. I moved here in 2000 to go to college at SUU and just loved Iron County. And so I've been here 20 years now. So I've lived in Cedar City, Enoch area longer than I lived in Panaca. And I just love this community. And because of my love for the community, I really tried to give back in the ways that I could. I serve on the Rotary, the Cedar City Rotary Club Board. I've served on the Canyon Creek Services Board of Directors for the last 4 years, and I've planned their fundraising activities because I think it's important to raise the money that they need to support victims of domestic violence and sexual assault in our community. So if you've done Dine Out for Shelter anytime in the last few years, thank you so much, because that's one of our big fundraisers. I've served on the Launch High School Planning Committee just because of my connection with Southwest Tech and the competency-based learning we do here. So I've served in that way as well. And I really, really love Cedar City. I have a family of 6 kids with my husband. We're a blended family, and they range in age from 6 to 15. So we've got a good fun time with all of those guys. My husband is Spencer, and he's the sales manager for Staley West. And really, really loves working there. He's a farm kid, so we just enjoy life here.
That's great. I love all of your kids. I didn't realize that you had them from 6 to 15. That's quite a range.
That's awesome. And a lot of them are the same age. Like, we've got 2 13-year-olds, 2 10-year-olds since it's blended, goodness. You know.
Wow, that's... Mm-hmm. I'll bet that's really fun sometimes.
It is, actually.
I love going out and exploring in the Panaca area, too. There's lots of cool stuff out there. You got Cathedral Gorge. There's those charcoal kilns up the road, the highway between there. Going off to Caliente and Pioche to just check out the towns there. Really cool area. I love it.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff out there. It was an awesome place to grow up.
What, Jenny? Yeah, I was just going to have to check it out. I haven't done any exploring out there at all. We've driven through a few times, but haven't taken time to really stop and explore. I think we got ice cream there once. Is there an ice cream place that's well-known? No.
Not in Panaca. I think in Caliente and in Pioche, I think they both have them.
Okay.
Yeah, Panaca doesn't have a lot.
All right, let's get back to you.
Okay.
Talk to us about, why did you decide to run for Iron County School Board?
So it started a few years ago, and it started with a frustration that I had about late start, early out Wednesdays, actually, because those are really, really hard. If you've got kids in elementary school and middle school or high school, Wednesdays are just horrendous. And I thought, there's got to be a better way. No other school district does it this way. And I brought it up to a couple of school board members, and I felt like my concerns were dismissed. And I thought, well, I can get mad and just complain, or I can decide to do something. And so that was kind of the impetus that got me going on school board. But as I learned more about what the board does, what its responsibilities are, what actual authority it has, I thought, you know, I work at Southwest Technical College, and I've worked at Southern Utah University for a long time, and I've kind of got this picture of the different options and opportunities that kids have after high school. And I thought, there's probably some information, some experience I can bring to our school system to help make sure our kids are prepared for life beyond K through 12 too, you know, knowing the different options that are out there and kind of what is required for those different forms of higher education or jobs, you know. And so I thought, gosh, maybe there's something I can do here. And as I mentioned before, I really love serving the community. It makes me feel good. I believe strongly in leaving places better off, you know, because you were there. And so that was kind of the impetus for it. It's, you know, it started out as a frustration, but it became something more about, I think I could actually, you know, do some things to help. As I've researched the issues personally here, as I thought more about running, I found out that we have the second highest intergenerational poverty rate in the state of Utah. So Iron County is the second poorest state in the state of Utah. And I also found out that we spend the least amount like on students, and that we pay our teachers, I think, the lowest amount in the state. I thought, these are problems, but these are things that the school board has power to help with. And so that became one of my driving forces as well, is how do we help our students, you know, this county that is suffering from intergenerational poverty. You know, we have low test scores, and there may be a tie to that, because if students don't have physical needs met, it's really hard to succeed academically. If they don't have support at home, it's harder to succeed academically. And so I thought, maybe there's something there. I also learned that about 40% of children in Utah have all available parents in the workforce. So if they've got single parents, obviously the parents are working, but even, you know, families with two parents, there's a lot of kids that just don't have parents home, they're working. And for me personally, when I was a single mom, it was really, really hard, and even still, to know that my kids go home after school and I'm still at work. In the summertime, my husband and I still work, and that's pretty much, you know, almost half of our families here probably, right? It's how Utah is. And so I thought, you know, to meet those physical needs of our impoverished students, as well as the students with working families, you know, what if we can do something about after school programs? What if we can do something in the summer? There are nonprofits out there like Boys and Girls Club and similar organizations who maybe we could bring here and collaborate with, you know, as a school district, and maybe do something with that to support our students and our families better. And so I just, as I learned more, there was a lot that I saw that I think we can do to support our students so that they'll be more likely to succeed academically, and to support the families in general so that they can support their students better. And so that was a lot of my motivation as well. I also really respect teachers. I think all of us, I don't personally know of anybody who, if you say, you know, who had the greatest impact on your life, most of us could name at least one teacher, right, who really, really impacted us. And so I think it's really important to support teachers, and I'd like to do that, you know, through serving as well. And then lastly, as a parent of school-aged children, I have a vested interest in our school board's decisions, you know. So those decisions that the board makes, they have a very personal impact on me and on my kids. And I think it's important to have representation of people who actually have kids in our schools on the school board. I think that you make decisions differently when it affects your children. And so I think that's an important reason why I chose to run as well.
What a fabulous perspective from so many different facets of your history and your experience. I love that you're bringing the SUU and the Southwest Tech perspective as far as, you know, how do we give our kids the skills for their next step. And I sure hear what you're saying. It really resonates with me. But what do you do with your kids during the summertime? What do you do when you're a single mom and you're working, or there's two parents who are working. These are real issues that are affecting our community. And I'm grateful that you're bringing them up. I think that those are real things. That's where the rubber meets the road for a lot of local families. That's really great.
Thank you.
So let's turn to, what do you want to accomplish if you are elected to the school board?
So the first thing personally that I would like to accomplish is changing late start, early out, because that's what got me going on this anyway. But I don't know of anybody, any parents who I've talked to that like late start, early out. They like the idea of the teacher prep. They don't like having late start and early out on Wednesdays. I don't know anybody who thinks that's a good idea, honestly, truthfully. And I've talked to a lot of parents. So that's the first thing that I'd like to change. I don't know what the best schedule is. Most school districts do early out on Fridays. And I personally like that, but in talking to parents, a lot of them don't. So if I were to be elected, I would do a survey. I would send a survey out to all of the district parents and just ask for their input on that so that we can make the best decision for everybody. But that would be the first thing that I would change. And then I kind of alluded to this, but I have this really big dream of figuring out after school and summer programs to support our students, you know, and I don't think that the school district could fund that by itself. Obviously, it would take money and it would take time. But, you know, we have facilities. They're not used in the late afternoons every day. You know, we have facilities that aren't used during the summer. And so I think this would be a good use facility-wise to keep those buildings active and going, you know, when we're out of school. And then I think it's good to build collaborations and partnerships with other organizations who can help mitigate, you know, some of the cost of doing things like that. There would be personnel costs, there would be, you know, food costs, there would be, you know, power and electricity and things. And so I would seek out partnerships, like I mentioned earlier, with maybe organizations like Boys and Girls Club or similar types of things where they have programming established, they have resources in place, you know, but we need to have maybe facilities and a place to just have the students come. And so that's like a big dream. I don't think that would happen quickly if it were to happen, but I think it's a really, really important thing that our school district could do to support students and families, to support their academic success. A lot of kids only get their meals while they're at school. So, you know, we're helping mitigate that issue. That's kind of my big, big dream is to actually create some after school and summer programming for those kids who need it, you know.
I think that's wonderful, and I think it's something that I think a lot of people in our community, it's been the kind of thing where they just deal with it because that's what you do. But if there was an alternative where kids could, you know, I mean, when my kids were little, they still are bitter about this, but I would make them, you know, read for an hour a day. Mm-hmm. They had to get out and play for an hour a day. If that was programmed, mm-hmm. with a summer program or an after-school program, how much benefit would our kids get and not be sliding back during mm-hmm. the summer? So, and I can't imagine that there's not organizations out there who've already got this programming done. I mean, we're not the only community that's dealing with these issues.
No, we're not. And there are organizations and there are grants you can get to fund these types of things, you know, and so we can apply for grants so that it's not necessarily coming out of the school district general fund, you know? So there are ways to do it, but I think to make it feasible, you have to partner with the school district at the very least, or have the school district kind of pushing it along to make it happen, you know? But I agree with you, you know, kids, we go back a little bit in the summer and a lot of kids, you can ask them to read, but unless they're being watched or told, they won't. But if they've got, you know, a young adult mentor or even a high schooler who's helping with the younger aged kids, you know, it's more likely that they're going to do it. They're going to have more fun doing it. They're going to build connections and relationships with mentors who they can look up to. You know, there's so many benefits from these types of programs.
I love it. Let's do it.
Okay. We'll do it.
Okay. All right, let's pivot just a little bit and let's talk about, what do you think the school board does well?
Okay. So the school board, I was really, really impressed with our school district's response to the COVID-19 closures. And those were hard on everybody. Those were hard on students, on parents, on the teachers, on employers, on everybody. But what our school district did, first of all, the teachers, I mean, they were on break when we were closed, and they came together and they very, very quickly put together curriculum and teaching plans and figured things out so that they could teach in an online format. Most of them have never done that before, but they did it very quickly. And some of them found really creative and fun ways to engage their students still. And I was really grateful for that because that was a lot of work. And then the fact that we were able to get Chromebooks to kids who didn't have computers and internet hotspots to kids who didn't have internet, that is huge. The other thing is that we were able to still get breakfasts and lunches out, and they weren't just given out at the schools, but we bussed them around to different neighborhoods for kids who, you know, couldn't get themselves to the different schools. So not only are you feeding kids who rely on those meals, you're giving them computer access who may not have it otherwise. You're giving them internet access who may not have it otherwise. And we're keeping our bus drivers and our lunchroom workers employed, you know, because most of them are hourly. So that's huge for so many reasons. And I've got family members and friends, and I've got classmates. I'm in a doctoral program. I've got classmates in other states. And so many of them were just lamenting that they have students who don't have internet access at home and no way to get it. Or they have one computer for their whole family, and, you know, the kids are all trying to share and it takes all day, you know, for them to get anything done. And I think it's really easy to see the negatives and the hardships that we've gone through in our district with schooling, because it hasn't been perfect. It's been hard, right? But I think it's really important to be grateful also for the things that we've done right. And compared to a lot of other places, I think we've done a lot of things right with those closures, you know. So I'm really grateful, frankly, for the good job that they did, and that they did very quickly.
I think that's a really well-made point. I was reading an article, I think it was Condoleezza Rice that actually was the author of this article, and talking about just what you were saying, how, you know, going back to your point of intergenerational poverty, during the COVID closure, the economically distressed portion of our population suffered far more because they don't have access to the same internet. They may not have a computer or multiple computers. So I didn't realize that the school district had done all of that with the Chromebooks and the hotspots. That's really impressive. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Good job.
And a lot of the extra stuff that they did is getting reimbursed through CARES Act funding too. So it didn't necessarily cost our district extra money, you know? So
that's a very well-made point. I know that's something that, of course, we're very sensitive to is the cost, because as you stated earlier, we are one of the poorest counties in the state. I think economically we're fifth from the bottom, and then we've got all, you know, couple that, you know, I guess with the economic issues at the school district, and it sounds like it could have been far more devastating than it was.
In a lot of places it was. And so, and that's why I think it's important to look at what we did right here compared to other places, because it could have been worse, you know?
Very well stated. Okay. So let's give you some time and talk about what do you think the school board needs to improve?
So I think that the current school board, they've struggled a lot with transparency and accountability. And I think that you see the result of that with kind of the attitude of the community at large towards them. There's not a lot of trust. And so I think the next school board is going to have to be really cognizant of that, of being extra transparent, of knowing that, you know, they're going to be held to probably even a higher level of accountability than previous boards, because that trust has not been there for a while now. I also think they need to do a better job of listening to the community. School board members are elected officials, and as such, they've got an obligation to not only, you know, serve their community in that role, but they've got an obligation to their constituents to represent them. And that doesn't always mean that you're representing your own personal interests, right? And so I think that the school board, the next one, is going to have to do a really good job of listening to the community. and making sure that they represent those wishes. So with any elected official, this is something that I believe, is that if you're elected to represent a group, and you can't ask your constituents to answer every single question or issue or policy that you may come up with, right? And so hopefully you just make good, practical, pragmatic decisions, and people are happy with them. But sometimes there's decisions that are not, they're not ambiguous at all, right? Like, it's pretty clear what your constituents want. And the best example I can give of that, and the one that's kind of on everybody's mind because I hear it a lot, is the Redmond mascot change. To me, it's very apparent, and this is in hindsight, but it's very, very apparent that this community as a whole was not ready for that change. And I think that's been expressed a lot, and it's been expressed pretty clearly. And I think that was probably an example of the school board of elected officials not listening to their constituents. And so that's something that's very, very important. It's something that I'm very aware of. I think all of the school board candidates have probably been contacted multiple times about the Redmond mascot change. I know I have, and I know Dave has, because we talk, and I'm guessing everybody else has as well. The thing that's hard for me with that I'm ambiguous on, is it's very clear to me that almost everybody I've talked to did not want it changed, right? What's not clear to me is I've got people who are telling me, change it back, change it back, change it back. But I've also got a lot of people telling me, oh, I think it's water under the bridge at this point. I think it'd be counterproductive to change it back. And so on that one, I really want to find out, like, legitimately what the community wants, because it was a very divisive issue, and it's obviously a very important issue to this community at large. And so I'm thinking if I'm elected, what I'd like to end up doing is either a truly randomized poll of voters, because that should give a legitimate, honest feedback about what the community wants. And I'm not even opposed to making it a ballot issue, honestly, because, again, it's been so divisive and it's been such a strong issue in this community. I think that we owe it to the constituents to find out what the community as a whole wants and then go with that. You know, whether or not we agree with it or not, I think it's important that we find out. And so that's something that I want to do if I'm elected, is legitimately find out, make the decision that the community wants, and then hopefully we can move past it, because it's been a really difficult one.
Sorry, I appreciate your willingness to kind of take that head on and actually talk about it in those terms, because it really is the elephant in the room. It has been so terribly divisive to mm-hmm. this community. I mean, it just tragically divisive. It's hard to wrap my brain around the ugliness that has surrounded this debate and really how it's torn the community apart. So as a candidate willing to take that on, you know, take that bull by the horns and talk about it in those terms is quite impressive. I haven't heard any other candidates really talk about it in those terms. So I appreciate that transparency and that willingness to really face those tough community issues. I think that's fantastic.
Thanks. And I think any of us, even if we avoid talking about it, it's going to be a major component of this election. I've had people tell me flat out that they're basing their entire decision on school board, on whether or not they'll bring the mascot back. And so regardless of whether we want to make it an issue as candidates, and sometimes it's hard because it's a very emotional issue, but there's practical things like budgets and policies, you know, that you have to focus on as well to do a good job. I think it's an important issue to the community, and so it should be an important issue to school board candidates and school board members. And truthfully, I want to know what the community wants, but I want it to be legitimate knowledge. I don't want it to be a vocal majority getting what they want. And that's why I said I'm not opposed to making it even a ballot measure. I really don't, because I genuinely want to know. And I'm hearing so many different opinions that it's hard to know what the majority want, you know? So
Yeah,
it's a tough one.
That's tough to have people say that this is my only issue that I'm going to vote on, as you just so eloquently described so many other really critically important issues that this community is facing with regards to our school district and our school board. I mean, there's real issues that need to be addressed. And so as a community, as a community member, I support your willingness to kind of move us past that and get to some of these, you know, the other issues that are so important that you were talking about. So I really do appreciate that.
Thank you,
especially because all too often volume is used as a substitute for gauging whether or not something is popular. And there has certainly been a lot of volume on both sides on this issue.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's been so divisive. You know, you've got one camp that is adamantly, you know, wanting to bring it back, and another camp that's, you know, adamantly opposed to bringing it back. And then a lot of people who are in the middle who say, I hate that it was changed, but I don't necessarily want to bring it back. So it's really hard to know, you know, but it would be awesome. I love this community. So if we could find a way to come back together and figure that out, I would really, really love that. And I hope that the next school board can facilitate that, because I think for the community as a whole, that's important. And I think for our educational system, it's important, you know?
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, we've got to get these kids back focused. I mean, and not that the kids are focused on the mascot issue, I think as much as some of the adults are focused on it, but the kids need to have the space to do what they need to do and get prepared for what's coming next at them. So thank you for that. I really appreciate that. Okay, we're going to give you an opportunity now to just tell us, what else do you want the community to know about Tessa Douglas? Make sure you give us your Facebook information, your website information, anything else that you would like voters to know.
So first, just so I don't forget, is that my website is tessaforschoolboard.com, or tessaforschoolboard.com, yeah. It's Tessa, the number 4, schoolboard.com. And then I'm on Facebook. I have a Facebook page that is, again, just Tessa Douglas for School Board. You can just search for it in there. As far as what I want voters to know, I guess, is that my number one decision maker on things that are ambiguous, right? Like, maybe not the Redmond, but things that are ambiguous, is my number one decision maker is I will always, always try to consider what is in the best interest of the students. And I will base my decisions around that. That's where my heart is. That's what I do in my professional life at Southwest Tech. It's what I did at SU. It's just try to make decisions based on what will serve our students best and what will do the most good for the most people. And so hopefully that resonates with voters in our community, and hopefully I get a chance to serve in this way. If not, I'll continue to serve in the other ways I do, because Iron County is a great place. It really, really is, and there's so many good people here, and it's just an honor to be a part of such a great community. So thank you for the opportunity, I guess, to run and possibly represent you.
Yeah, very well said. We talk about that a lot, how great this community is and how blessed we are to be a part of it. And so thanks for all of your words today and sharing that with us. We've had Tessa Douglas on with us today. It's been fabulous. I've enjoyed our conversation.
And me too.
I'm glad. We're not so scary, right?
Not so far.
Well, Tessa, thanks so much for giving us your time today. This has been Color Country Politics. I'm Jenny Hendricks, along with
Harris
and Tessa Douglas.
And we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.